Thank you, David, for your kind invitation to be here today with you. Is my microphone making noise out there? Can you hear me? Okay. And I also want to thank Ed and Linda Beers for their wonderful hospitality to me. They came and picked me up at the airport and shared their home with me. It's a treat to be here in Colorado, a place that I recall from younger years being out here. And now I've come to you from Arlington, Virginia, and I want to give you greetings from those about 2,000 souls that live there, that go to my church there. And also, as president of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association, we have about 1,900 members, and they're in my heart today as I speak with you. And it's very good to be with your congregation and to hear a little bit about the history of this congregation and the Foothills Unitarian Church roots that extend back so long, and the way you now are involved with your community, working on pressing issues such as immigration and environment and peace and justice. And it's really good to be here as a part of your Heritage Month. And I've chosen to speak on a part of our Unitarian Universalist heritage, more recent than our roots of Servetus and Transylvania, but very important part of our heritage that's been in my heart this year. In my office at my church in Arlington, I have a sign over top of my door. It says Reeb Hall. It's about 8 feet long, and it's made of metal. I was thinking about bringing it to hold it up and show it to you, but I wasn't sure how it would fit on the airplane, so I decided to leave it at home. But if you can picture this big sign, it says Reeb Hall. And it reminds me daily of the history of my church and the history of our Unitarian Universalist witness in the world. For almost 50 years, that sign hung over the front door of the church's original historic building. And that building was named in honor of James Reeb, the UU minister who was martyred in Selma, Alabama, March of 1965. My church was founded in the 1940s, so we're much younger than you all. We were founded in Virginia when it was still a very much a Jim Crow southern state, and the church made an intentional decision to break the segregation laws in effect there by having integrated church, integrated Sunday school, integrated social and education community programs. And James Reeb was a young minister in the 60s, not famous then. He was just a young minister, part of the All Souls DC Unitarian Church staff. And he used to come over to our church all the time to lead programs, to be a summer minister. And of course, later on, he moved to Boston to work with urban black youth. And he joined Reverend King in Selma and was beaten to death by white supremacists. And so my congregation decided in 1965 to put his name on the original church building over the door. It's now in my office because a couple years ago, part of our renovations brought that old building down, but I could not let go of that sign. And why couldn't I let go of that sign? There's a line or a set of lines in the Deuteronomy, the book in the Hebrew scriptures, that says a message must go to the people to help us get to the promised land, to get to a beloved community for all people flowing with milk and honey. And that message is this: love with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And these teachings given to you are to be on your heart. They are to be impressed on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And so I put the sign, I wouldn't let it be discarded. I put the sign up on my door because I wanted to love the teachings, live with the teachings, and share them. And so I put them on the gate. It's one of the ways that I believe we can stay in touch with something about our history, the history of our nation, the history of our religion, the history of the origins of some of our congregations, but also the ongoing struggle for racial justice, which is very much on the mind of so many people. It's a reminder of the pain and the hurt that comes about when you stand up for what you believe and the society doesn't get it. It's an important reminder for all of us in our individual lives of what our values are living in the world. And so the 50-year anniversary events of Selma this year have been resonating among the hearts and gatherings of many folks. In our congregation and across the Unitarian Universalist Association, 500 Unitarian Universalists gathered in Birmingham for a conference before the events, and then the weekend events where President Obama was present, and a number of other very important leaders. And there are 500 Unitarian Universalists who went to walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge to commemorate, to remember, to reflect. And the interesting thing is that the stories that I heard are the kinds of things that are like the stories that are in my congregation, that the Reed Paul sign reminds me of. That these are real people who lived real things in 50 years ago and who are currently living real things. I had everyone in my congregation read Mark Morrison Reed's book, Selma Awakening. If you have not yet read it, I encourage you to read it. It's a paperback. It's not real expensive. You can get it from Amazon, or I don't know if you have a bookstore here that sells it. But in the book, he tells the story of the history of the famous people, the notable people, the institutions, the big themes that were going on, but he tells more. He has done the research, and he's telling the story of ordinary people, young ministers, church members, youth, people who answered the call to go to Selma 50 years ago. Morrison Reed came to be with us last month in Birmingham, and what he stressed to us was something that is very powerful, which is that it was regular people and knowing other regular people that made it possible for so many people to show up in Selma 50 years ago. There have always been just and noble causes out there, and great leaders always have been inspirational to people to gather. But how do you get thousands of people, including hundreds of Unitarian Universalists, back 50 years ago to go into that strange, hate-filled little town in Alabama to witness to an event like Selma? Mark Morrison Reed pointed out a number of connections, and he said he could amplify it by hundreds. It was when somebody you know invites you, and you can't say no. That's how so many of us showed up, because they were in relationship with other people. They had met each other in seminary, or they'd worked with each other in the urban leagues or any organizations that they'd been a part of, and they answered the call to go to this little town of Selma when Martin Luther King sent it out. In his book, he tells many stories. One of the stories he told is from here in Colorado. The minister at First Unitarian in Denver was Dick Henry, and he'd been connected with a lot of people in the civil rights movement because he'd come from Knoxville, Tennessee. And so when he heard of the call, not only did he want to respond, but he wanted the people that he was with in his congregation to respond. So apparently he asked them, and he got 90 people from Colorado to go to this strange little town in Alabama to show up for an event because the Bloody Sunday had happened. And they decided they were going to go because their minister asked them, and he asked them because his friends from the civil rights movement in the South had asked him. And there was a story I heard from a woman I'd known a number of years ago when I was a brand new minister, how she went to Selma. Judy Street was just a young woman with two little boys and a husband. She attended the Mount Vernon Unitarian Church. And she got to know some of the civil rights leaders because that church hosted training programs for CORE, the Congress on Racial Equality, back in the early 60s. And she was helping them out. And the church was actually at risk because they were breaking some of the Virginia laws by even having those gatherings at their in their buildings. And so she got to know them and helped out. And then when the 1963 march happened in Washington, she attended along with other UUs from the D.C. area. And then when the Southern Christian Leadership Council went to Selma in 1965 and started their campaign for voting rights, and this was a long process. It didn't just happen in 1 month. It was a long process. When that happened, and they had the Bloody Sunday events, did you all see the Selma movie? So if you weren't alive 50 years ago, the Selma movie is a great way to show how the American public woke up when all of a sudden this event happened, but it was on national TV. Back in 1965, that was a new thing, that they could actually take the moving pictures of it and put it on the news that night, and everybody saw it. Bloody Sunday. Peaceful marchers, including children and elders, beaten by police clubs, run over by police on horses. And so then Martin Luther King put out a call and said, we need other people to be here with us because we're going to keep doing this. We're going to walk across this bridge until we get voting rights. And so there is Judy, this housewife in Virginia in the suburbs, who had had, you know, a million reasons that she didn't have to go. I mean, who would do this? But she knew some of the people that were there because she'd gotten to know them when they were working at her church. And so she and a lot of other Unitarian Universalists in the D.C. area got on a train. That train still runs. Amtrak is running it now. It's called the Southern Crescent. And they took the train down to Birmingham and then got rides down to Selma. Her sons tell this story, and it's in Mark Morrison Reed's book, of the scene. Her thunderstruck husband found his objections to her going were to no avail. She was going, and that was that. To his astonishment, he found this gentle creature who abhorred camping under a tent, moving off down the train platform with nothing more than a rolled-up blanket, leaving him and two young boys staring forlornly through the bars as all they held most dear in the world moved determinedly toward an unknown and possibly terminal fate. So she went to Selma. 35 years later, after she had raised her sons and had a career and been active in many activities through her church and community, 35 years later when she died, and I was going to do the memorial service, her sons told me that this was the story they wanted lifted up about their mom. This story about a few days in her life that exemplified for them all of who she was and valued. It was a story that had impressed her sons, and then they grew up telling the story about their mom to their friends and their sons, and that she knew and they knew that by her living in response to what friends of hers needed, living in her sense of love, her sense of justice, her sense of inner conscience, she had to put up with the danger and the discomfort. That was what mattered to her kids. And that was the story they kept telling after she died. And her story is 100 times over, told by all the people that went. And James Reeb, who, as I said, was not a famous minister, just a young minister trying to do good in the world, but who knew a lot of the folks. And he had to make the decision to leave his wife and young children to join the hundreds of other Unitarian Universalists and ministers. The protest he was on the bridge in Selma 2 days after Bloody Sunday turned out not to be violent. But that evening, as he was leaving the diner with other ministers, they were attacked by angry white men for being N lovers. When he died, President Johnson called his widow. Martin Luther King eulogized him at one of the memorial services, and there's a quote on the cover of your program today. The vast media all took notice of this because here he was, a white minister, being beaten to death for his beliefs about racial justice. The story of Reeb, of Selma, has been told over and over again. It's a pivotal mythic tale for many UUs, especially for those who are a part of the civil rights awakening of the 1960s that Morrison Reed writes about. And the civil rights work of that era was amazing and inspiring. At the Selma events last month, we heard stories from the past. There were 50-year veterans there, people now in their 70s and 80s. We gave thanks to the martyrs' families, Reeb's family, Viola Liozzo's family, and Jimmie Lee Jackson's family were all there. Their partners, their children, their grandchildren. And they came to talk with us, and we offered them our gratitude. We also heard at this conference last month the sad truth that while many of the ideals have made a difference in our country, many of the civil rights issues still seem to be with us. And it gives us a chance to ponder what the sacrifice of 50 years ago meant and what, as our Unitarian Universalist tradition, meant in that involvement. I think it's interesting that historically, back then, we were the only Unitarian, we were the only denomination that showed up as a denomination. And last month, again, the 500 or 600 of us that were there with our yellow shirts and banners and our president of our association and the moderator of our association, we were all there. We were the only denomination that showed up as a denomination. And so I think there's something about Selma in our history that is trying to say something to us as religious people. When I first came onto the UU scene, it was about 15 years after Selma, and I discovered then a wide gulf among our leaders and among our congregations. Many people felt that the folks that told the Selma story were telling it as a way of escaping from continuing the work of racial justice, and that white folks who went felt they'd done their bit, so they'd earned their badges. I wondered at this feeling. I wondered, why were people saying this? Because I didn't doubt the sincerity and integrity of all those people who had risked their lives and the amazing accomplishment of the Christian Southern Leadership Council. And I know that Selma was an awakening moment for Unitarian Universalists, because before Selma, racial justice had been somewhat removed from us. We'd passed noble resolutions, but we had never before put our bodies on the line. Perhaps it has something to do with what happened after Selma, after the historic voting rights legislation was passed. Just 3 years later, Martin Luther King was assassinated and our cities burned. And right after that, the Unitarian Universalist Association itself, because of financial troubles, backed away from their commitments to communities of color. And there were a lot of rifts in congregations and among our leadership. That was a painful, wounding time. So I'm wondering if that's part of what happened, why 15 years after Selma, people were wondering, did Selma give us just simply cover for not continuing the work? But I gotta say, right now, there seems to be something calling to us again. The wealth divide between the races is widening. Voting rights laws have been made impotent in many states across this country. And white privilege and racism seem to be stronger than ever in many communities. And for those of us who have worked the hardest, who feel like we failed, it's really hard to be positive about the legacy of Selma. And I speak as a white woman who has been learning and discerning about race all my life. Even though I grew up in mostly white communities, when I went to college and then in the years after, my friendships and community involvement and mentorship came from people of non-Anglo identities. And so I became really involved with the questions, the questions that were being brought up by the greatest of our leaders and theologians. And I've had the privilege to serve with our denomination on our boards and on our national committees to try to understand the wound of race in this country and in our denomination. But when I get discouraged and I want to turn away from the work, and that happens regularly, when I want to give up, I remember the teachers and the friends and the people who matter to me. And when I was in Selma last month, I looked around the room and I saw the reasons why I don't give up. It's those folks, those people. Morrison Reed says it's all about the relationships you're in. It's all about the people whose lives and stories you get to know. And so Selma happened long ago, half a century ago, and a lot has gone on, but it feels like today there's something new being called to us. Something's trying to reawaken us. Something's trying to get our attention, to focus. Something about the lives of the people is calling to us. The people who started the Black Lives Movement are calling to us. The 80-year-old veterans of the Edmund Pettus Bridge are calling to us. And I would encourage you to let the universe voice break through to you. Read Mark Morrison Reed's book if you have a chance, or go back and see Selma again if you've already seen it. You know the song that was made famous by the song, by the movie Selma? It won an Oscar for best song. It was written after the movie was made, and it was written by the rap artist Common and his musician friend John Legend. They wrote it, the movie had been made, it was in editing, and Ferguson happened. And so they wrote this, and it became the closing music for the movie Selma. And I think it's going to be an anthem song for years to come. One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. One day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory. Oh, glory. Hands to the heavens, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. Living in us, resisteth us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. They say, stay down, and we stand up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up. Now the war is not over, victory isn't won. Selma's now for every man, woman, and child. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs of history. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. Coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory. When the war is done, when it's all said and done, we'll cry glory. We'll cry glory. Listen to what the world is saying to you. And then tell it to your children. Tell about it when you walk and when you cry, and place it on your gates like a sign that says you care about our history. It's not something to say it's done and gone, because it's not. Many wonderful words were written about James Reeb, and at one of the memorial services, he was compared to a soldier who died on the field of battle. And he read the poem that Archibald MacLeish wrote. The young dead soldiers do not speak. Nevertheless, they are heard in the still houses. Who has not heard them? They say, we were young. We have died. Remember us. They say, we have done what we could, but until it is finished, it is not done. They say, we have given our lives, but until it is finished, no one can know what our lives gave. They say, we leave you our deaths. Give them their meaning. We were young, they say. We have died. Remember us. And so Unitarian Universalism walked into Selma because of the relationships and the values they had. And it continues to call to us. So remembering this, the martyrs, remembering our history, it's not possible, it's not necessary to know what's going to happen next or to work for the success. What's important is for us to put it on our door frames and to say, this is our faith. Faith asks us not to succeed, but to try. Because we want to live out our values. Conscience urges us on, for we have dreamed of that better world. This is what living deeply and fully and with integrity demands. And so, dear friends of the Foothills Unitarian Church here in Colorado, I want you to think about who you are in relationship with, in your families, in the church, in the surrounding community, in the wider world of Unitarian Universalists. Meet those you don't know, or listen more closely to those you have known. Listen deeply to their stories and learn the story behind the story. And consider the road to Selma, consider the road since Ferguson, so that you can be there present when the call comes to you. What call will be to live in love and to place those teachings that have been given to you on your heart and to impress them on your children and to talk about them when you're at home or when you're on the road, when you lie down and when you get up, and to write them on the door frames of your houses and your gates. This is my invitation to you. It's also my calling to you to believe that each of you can awaken and can reawaken a sense of ministry to be made whole so that all of us can know what it feels like